if I have to take two faces of this hand, if this side is acceptance, the other side experiences love. If you want your children to experience love,
accept them the way they are. Hi, welcome to Partners in Upbringing. I'm Kalyani.
I'm Himani.
And we are parents just like you.
Always on a lookout. So come join us in our endeavor as we connect with parenting experts and fellow inspiring parents to know the best practices for raising happy and confident children.
Visit partnersinupbringing.com for podcasts, videos, blogs, and to connect with experts. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Partners in Upbringing.
You can listen to us on your favorite podcast app, Partners in Upbringing, your trusted partner in your parenting journey. Both our children are not teenagers, but we are heading there. And it feels like a tough territory to handle. We already have started to get some glimpse of what's coming our way in the future, as they are already behaving like preteens. Now, we are curious to know where we are heading and what is that world like. Can we do something right so that we can prevent and avoid some conflicts or worries or anxieties in the future?
What intrigues me the most is the different types of parent-teen bonds which we observe around us. Few parents are authoritative. They are still setting the rules like it was common in the olden days. Some are nurturing dependents, where the teenager themselves are relying heavily on parents for decision-making and problem-solving. And many others are like buddies to their teens, where there is a mutual learning and a joint exploration as if they are equals. And yes, there are a few more who follow the Western style, where the children are completely free to take their decisions. From today's conversation with our guest, we would like to find out what is the right approach we as parents should be having to ensure that there is minimum stress, less friction, and maintain or rather strengthen our relationship with our children.
To find answers to all of these questions and more, today we have with us Dr. Dinesh Nehete. Dr. Dinesh has a very interesting journey. He is a PhD in physics and has had an extremely successful career in the corporate world. In 2014, he sacrificed his corporate career to pursue his inner calling and trained himself to be a parenting coach and a counselor. And this journey was actually rooted from the observations he had made about the adult behavior during his corporate years experience and also as a parent of a hyperactive child. Today, Dr. Dinesh is a founder of two NGOs, Enreach Foundation and Enreach Learning, with a core focus of bringing in awareness about child development in parents. He has trained more than 18,000 parents and has helped more than 45 schools and its teachers. So it's my pleasure to welcome Dr. Dinesh Nehete to Partners in Upbringing podcast. It's so wonderful to have you with us today.
Hello, Dr. Dinesh.
Hello, Himani Kalyani. Thank you very much for inviting me on your podcast, and definitely we'll have a good discussion today.
Looking forward to it.
Dr. Dinesh, your focus is to bring awareness about child development in parents. So how does it translate to teenagers? Can you help us understand the teenagers' world from their perspective?
Yes. Kalyani, what you mentioned about 3-4 ways, in that it's very rightly mentioned that some people act like a buddy and that works a better option. The reason being, this is the age, the teenage or the adolescence is an age of transition from a childhood to an adulthood. So basically they are not only changing physically, but they are changing emotionally as well as socially into an adulthood. So their thinking, their behavior, their body language, everything get translated or transformed from childhood to adulthood. They don't anymore, after this transition, behave like a child. We don't like to see a childish behaving adult, right? So that's where this transformation is happening. And when this transformation happens, there are a lot of changes which are going on in the brain, and they don't get the spare brain to handle this transformation. They have to use the same brain during this transformation. And that's why you see a lot of variations in their behavior, that sometimes they behave like a child, sometimes they behave like an adult, sometimes they expect that you should treat them like a child, sometimes they expect that you need to treat them as an adult, and this is not predictable. Like, you cannot understand that when they will come like that. And that's where the difficulty of this age lies.
But it must be really tricky for a parent, because we don't know how to react every time, because their expectations might be different every single situation.
Correct. So if we understand what kind of changes are happening for these children and what are their challenges, then we can act like a buddy. Like, every time they approach to you, you try to understand them first and then react, or then you give your response. That works better. That's why when you said that the buddy system type of parenting works better, because you try to understand first that moment, that scenario, and then giving a response according to.
But when you said, you know, that being a buddy to your child is the best way, I have seen that, you know, closely in my family. And I can also see a certain amount of fear which the parent has, you know, for choosing this path. For choosing this style, because it's a conscious decision that has been taken. And then you also have to be ready to be treated as a buddy. For a parent, it's easy to treat their child as a buddy. But are they really ready to be treated as a buddy of their children, by the children?
No, that's...
So how do we deal with, like, this kind of a, you know, equation?
So that's where the challenge comes. Like, they are fluctuating between this childhood and adulthood during this transition period. So sometimes they feel like treated as a child. And if you guess it right at that time, or if you evaluate it right at that time, you can give orders, because they are in the mode of listening to orders at that time. But sometimes they are not, because they will question you. So when they are questioning you, you need to get that this is the intelligent mind has started working.
Okay.
So let me quickly give a few things about this. Like, we all know about physical changes, that transition happens in this age. Those physical changes also happen in two different ways. That is, some are early bloomers. So their body changes earlier stage, that's 9-10 years of age for girls, and 10-11-12 years of age for boys. So these are early bloomers. Some are late bloomers. So they are 14-15 onwards, they start getting matured bodily. So now this is one part, which is a body transition. The other part is an emotional transition, or the mindset transition. So that is called as adolescence. So their behavioral part, or their way of communication, is also changing during this age. These two happen in the same period of life, but they are not dependent on each other. It's not like body modifies, so my mind modifies, or my mind changes, so my body changes accordingly. So they are just happening parallelly. So sometimes you will see that some girls or some boys are matured early physically, but emotionally and mentally, they are still not in that phase. They still look innocent, they act innocent, they talk innocence. So their body has transformed, but their mind has not transformed yet. Right? So this scenario for girls becomes very difficult. Early blooming girls, it becomes difficult because society starts covering them up or handling them more carefully or giving them too many instructions, and they don't understand why it's happening, because their mind is not into that space yet. Right? For boys, the late blooming scenario is difficult. Because early blooming boys, people immediately talk them as a big person. They start giving responsibility, treating them as an adult and giving them respect and all those things. But when they are late bloomers, even peers start teasing them. That abhi bachcha hi hai, right? That kind of comments. So those comments hurt them emotionally, and the behavior changes. So these social reactions connected to this early blooming and late blooming create difficulty for them. Opposite is very easy, and that's where the difficulty also appears. So all this mix and match is causing difficulty. And unless as parent we understand this scenario, that this is what they are going through, we are not there to support. we start blaming, we start shouting, we start punishing, and that becomes a difficulty for the child. But if we understand this developmental stage, this transformation and why it is happening, then it's easy for parents also to handle that scenario, that particular time. And the child also gets support. Support is the biggest, tool for the child to develop well.
When we are talking about the physical aspects, early blooming, late blooming, it's easy to see physical changes. But when it is emotional aspects, apart from support, what is it that parents can look up to know what is happening with the child? To even know if the child is a late bloomer and accept that.
So here comes basically the anxieties and fears of parents.
Yes, and especially with comparison, because we have so many of their friends coming there. Some of them have already matured, some have not. So where is my child?
Yeah. So from there, the fears develop. And if you don't treat these fears well, or your anxieties keep under your control, you start reacting quickly because you feel that your child is going in that direction. And you try to cover up, or you try to bring in, or you try to control. And the moment you start doing that, adverse effects start showing up. So instead of that, develop a good communication with your child. Like, keep all your biases, anxieties aside. Understand or believe your child that he will do well. He will communicate well. Develop a good trusting relationship from your side. And then the children talk very freely. They talk. I have this experience that teenagers don't hide anything if you keep an open, non-judgmental communication with them.
Actually, I can vouch for that, because I have already, there have been times that I have had temper, and my daughter has, like, the third, fourth time, I can see that she wants to say something, but she's not saying it. And when I, coax her to say it, she clearly tells me that, you are going to get angry, so I'm not going to tell you.
Correct.
Yeah, so I think we have already seen this, and we know that it's going to only amplify as they age. Because yeah. I think somewhere also the power changes, right? Because they are almost becoming an adult, and there's a shift of power. Can you just elaborate on this, because it's a big change in the life of a parent and a child, whatever the child has gone through as a in the childhood. You will be in a better position to tell us that how does this work.
Okay, so this is a good point you brought up. the point of the power, right? So child starts understanding that he is now becoming strong in all aspects, so physically as well as intellectually. I always tell parents that children don't get spoiled in teenage. They are already spoiled, or they are already gone bad, but they show up in teenage because there they start getting the confidence that I am now big, I can handle my life, I am no more dependent on you, I can go out and survive myself. That kind of confidence starts building in teenage. And as that confidence starts building in there, all previous impacts will start showing up. So if you have treated them as a dominating parent, they start showing up as a rebel, because now they know that I can handle my life. I will no more accept your commands.
If you are enjoying this conversation, please subscribe to us and give us a 5-star rating on the platform you're listening to. Thank you.
If you have treated them as a very dependent, childish kind of scenario, they start showing up that I want to become independent. So they demand for the freedom, independence. And that's where you see the changes during teenagers, which is the reflection of whatever has happened before, right? So spoiling or going out of control is a teenager's behavior with respect to how they are handled in the previous time. Because they have already developed their mindset, their thought process, how my parents act with me, what they will do, how I have to counter, and all their strengths, they start using it. Now, if you look at the typical complaints from the parents, they say that my child don't listen. My child thinks that he knows everything. They don't ask your permission. They just take decision on their own and then they go ahead. So all these are the complaints about teenagers. But very carefully, if you look at it, it's basically that maturing process which says that be independent. You're now grown up, right? So that's a natural maturity. So they want to become independent. And if you look at the characteristic of person who is independent, you will see all these characteristics. Like there is a self-confidence. There is a confidence about my own knowledge. There is a confidence that I can do. There is a tendency that don't get the interference by others when you decide to do something. So they make out their ways to complete their task, whatever they want to do. They skillfully maneuver through or avoid your interference by their intelligence, all manipulation and whatever you call it as. So becoming independent and our complaints go hand in hand as a consistent complaint. So if you look at it not as a complaints or the bad behavior, but behavior of a person becoming independent, and if you start supporting them to become independent, it becomes a good collaboration because they are trying to and you are supporting. Then there is no struggle. But if you don't support that way their development, then you have a struggle. Basically, you are going against the natural process and you fight with the nature in this case, not with your child.
So it's the lens which the parents looks through is what makes the big difference.
Correct.
I would just re-emphasize for all the parents, all the listeners here, that we have to remember that it's the damage has been done already. And it is just showing in teenage. The way you bring up your treat your children in the childhood is more important than how they are treated in the teenage.
Correct. Very true. So it's difficult to repair it there. It's right. Better to build it right from the beginning.
True. Perfect.
Just to go back a little bit on where we were discussing that the parent and the child can be buddies. And you also mentioned that communication is the key. Now, we all know that and accept that, but how to achieve it? Because you are busy in the office the whole day. The teenagers, of course, they go to school or college early in the morning. They have their assignments and are with their friends the whole day. So the interaction bracket is very small. And in that, the moods also have to match. We don't want to be having a lot of questions thrown at them. I've heard one or two therapists even say you should have a family time where that is dedicated once a week and everybody sits down, which is a formal kind of a setting. So do you suggest that or any other tips you would like to share for building strong communication?
Yeah, I can suggest many things. So basically, there are certain things which can be understood but difficult to implement, right? So implementation in life and understanding are two separate processes. So when we're talking to each other, communicating this way as a verbal communication, the brain can understand. But to make it happen in your life, like how to behave with child, if parents are asking for this, and if I explain, understanding is easy. Bringing it into the practice, requires handholding, requires coaching. Without that, it becomes very difficult. And for certain people, it becomes more difficult. For some people, it can be possible, but certain people becomes difficult. It's something like, I always keep giving this example. Parenting is a behavioral part. Means parenting is not understanding, it's a behavior. And behavior requires practice to get into practice, basically.
Yes, because unlearning is there and we have so much of baggage from...
So all these are the thought processes, but I'll give you a simple analogy. You all must have learned how to ride a bicycle. Can you explain me how you balance it? You don't
know. Just happens.
This happens, right? Many of you must have learned how to swim. Can you explain me how you float? It becomes difficult, right? So for understanding these things, you need to practice in certain way and it automatically happens. So like cycling, you try to pedal it for some time with support and you get one moment where you get the balance. Swimming also, you move your hands and legs in certain way and then at some moment, you get that how to float. After you understand how to float, you don't need to move your hands and legs. You can just lie down on the water and you can float. But to understand that how to my whole body, mind and brain, everything to get in sync, I need to practice. So same way, this behavior with children needs some way of practice. And once you do that, it starts happening. That's where my course comes in. Which I said that physically I conduct the courses.
No, I think get it. And thank you for emphasizing the need to be trained. Like, you know, you had said the philosophy that me and Kalyani, both of us have started believing in now. To become a parent is natural, but parenting is not.
Correct. So becoming mom and dad is a natural phenomena, but parenting, nurturing a child is to be learned.
If you could just give one or two examples of where can a parent start, or your own journey, because you are a parent, or your clients who have experienced that.
No. Whatever your question, whatever the question you have asked, like, can you explain how each parent should handle? I'll tell you. But will it be possible? No, may not be. You'll understand that, yes, it works. It this is the way we need to do. But practicing it is a different, and that has to be done in the presence of some coach who knows how to handle that. Right? Okay. So what you need to do as a child to open up with you, or very clearly communicate with you, or don't have the difference of opinion or rebel kind of behavior, is understanding the child. And the key to understand the child is understanding and validating their emotions. Like, when they say something, when they complain about something, when they come into the rage, you shouldn't be denying their emotions. Like, you shouldn't get angry. This is a trivial thing. You shouldn't get tempted. This is a trivial thing. Is not the right approach. Because temptations are natural. You cannot say you shouldn't get tempted. You, as an elder people, also get tempted. You yourself get angry many times. Right? So, their emotions you need to validate, that feeling this way is okay, but after that feeling, behaving so and so way is not okay. So, right, when you accept their feelings, when you validate their feelings, they feel like you understand them, and when you understand them, there is an ease in communication, so they are okay to communicate with you. But when you invalidate their feelings itself, then they don't get connected with you, they don't feel like you understand their world, and they don't talk to you. They want to talk to their peers, because peers understand their world. You don't.
So the way to understand our child's world, which the mantra is, keep the to understand and validate their emotions.
Correct. Correct. This not only your teenagers, this works with everybody.
Everybody. True.
Into their emotions. More you are ready to listen to their emotional talk, their emotions, they feel you are with them. And they feel comfortable sharing everything with them, with you. And once we understand what they are going through, it's easy to take actions. If we don't even understand what they are going through, it becomes difficult for you to correct anything. So children have their own world, especially in teenage, because there is a generation gap. Your way of understanding world and their way of understanding world is different. So every new generation has their own way of looking at the life. And if we understand their way of looking at life and then work over there or talk to them in that world, they are ready to listen to you. But if you are saying, what is this fashion? You shouldn't behave like this. Is this a dressing sense? No, it's good in their context. It's not good in your context. Right? So if you feel hurt, if you feel something bad in your society, you explain to them that, okay, elders don't feel like this dress is decent. So when you are coming into this area, please dress this way. And they will accept. Because in their world, if you are allowing them to dress up in their way, then they are ready to cooperate with you to dress up in your way for your functions and your societal structure.
Right. You rightly said, it's a collaboration. You have to give some to take some.
Correct. Physical appearance, looks, bodily appearance becomes very, very important for these people, for these age children, to keep up their self-esteem. Their self-esteem is very much connected to their looks and appearance. It's a very natural thing which we don't look at it. Because that's where the sexuality, the reproduction, the opposite sex attraction and all nature is playing. and to impress the opposite sex, physical appearance becomes important. So nature is driving them to think in that way. And if you're blocking that, it becomes a difficulty for them. So what we need to teach them is not to stop appearing this way, but explaining that, yes, feeling this way is correct. Thinking of appearing this way is correct, but invading somebody's personal space or personal thoughts, behaving badly with somebody is not the acceptable thing in the social structure. So there is a human society's rules and regulations where you need to behave. But your inner thoughts and inner feelings are not bad or not wrong because they are very natural.
Right. That is a time when the physical appearance becomes so important. Sometimes children get carried away. So how do you strike a balance as a parent? You understand where they're coming from, but at the same time, those are the formative years. And they're very important years for your career building as well. So how do you strike a balance without any conflict?
Again, whatever is in our hand is what we are talking about as a parents. So to help them to build their self-confidence, build their self-esteem. So your communication should be in such a way that they feel proud about themselves. So you talk about their looks. So whatever the good part of it, you highlight it. When you highlight it, when you give that confidence, the need of showing up will reduce. All good things, all positive things, what they do, you must acknowledge. We are too much into correcting thoughts. Mm-hmm. So to make our child good means find out what is not good and correct it. Right? Instead of that, you focus on what is good and acknowledge that. So they will start focusing themselves also in their good part. And they will enhance it. They don't need to keep on correcting things or focus on only correcting things and feeling bad about themselves. Because more they see bad things about themselves, more their self-esteem will come down. Self-confidence will come down. But if you highlight their strengths, they feel proud of themselves and they will be positive in their approach. So this is one way we can do. Second is take interest in their life. So they have interest in something which you don't like, but there is a world which likes that. You also show interest. You may not get into that completely, but at least show that he's doing something. So somewhere you need to make sure that they feel confident about themselves, because that's what the important thing of this age, that I am somebody, my identity has some value in the society. Yes. Confusions are there. They don't understand what will be valued in the society. Sometimes they see a underworld don who is very powerful. People go with him, people surrender to him, and they may think that that is the right thing. That's the right power. Because they don't have that evaluation mind yet very ready about what is good for society and what is good not good for society. They only want to see that they are in a powerful and in a position into the society. So there a good talk is required, like a rational discussion, like why such thing is not good, why such thing is this way is good. So we need to talk in that terms. And this only happens, they are ready to listen to you only if you are listening to their emotions. If you are not listening to their emotions and giving a preaching talk, they shut their ears.
I'm just going to take one listener question here, which is very related. And I think you've answered a bit of it, but let me just read it out. It says, what to do when you know the decision your child is taking is not safe, but at the same time, you don't want to impose your decision on them.
Okay. So as the child grows, his ego or his self-identity is also growing. If you look at a child at the birth, first few couple of months, maybe a year, less than a year, they don't have any identity. They don't feel like it's me. I is not there. Around age of three and a half, where they start showing up their identity, that I am somebody and you must listen to me, right? That part comes at three and a half, and then it starts growing. So every age, that I has a need, and if that need is fulfilled, the I becomes healthy, comfortable. If the need is not fulfilled, the I becomes distorted, which we call as egoistic personality or submissive personality, something which is distorted I. Now, in teenage, what is the requirement is 11, 12, they start forming their opinions. And their opinion, the identity revolves around the opinion. So they will keep on telling you something as their opinion. And if you listen to their opinion and discuss about it, the I is fulfilled, healthy. If you start rejecting, denying, making fun of their opinions, then the I gets distorted. And then it starts showing its power to get visible. I must be visible to people. So they start pushing their opinions with you. But if you listen every time, just giving respect to their opinions doesn't mean that you should follow that opinion, right? Just listening to it, talking about it, giving your understanding about that opinion, this kind of talk helps them to be happy about their me. Little later, they want to take decisions because the machinery which is required for taking decisions, that's a cognitive thinking, what we call as, the cognitive brain starts developing after 13, 14. So there the machinery is ready. So they want to use that machinery. So they want to take the decisions. Right? So you will find your teenagers want to take decisions. Now here we need to help them to take decisions. So now you know that the experience is not enough to take decisions. Though the logical thinking is available, the experiences are not enough. The past knowledge is not enough to take decisions, right decisions. What we can do here is give them options. And when you give options in such a way that any option is right. At the level of rightness, maybe. Something lower, something higher. But they will...
That's very
smart. So they will evaluate in their mind and take a call. So their decision may go wrong. But out of these four.
Yes. And this giving options and this practice has to be there on a daily basis, you're saying.
Correct. Every time, wherever it is. Right. So this helps them to improve upon their decisions. And when they become 17, 18, they want to take decisions. So there they actually start showing up as if like, don't interfere. I want to take my decisions.
Yeah.
What they are actually communicating is, I am ready to take the consequences as well. Mm-hmm. And if you allow them to take decisions on their own and face the consequences, they start taking right decisions. And that I is also fulfilled. So that egoistic nature will not bring out the head. Upar nahi aayega. Mm-hmm. Ego upar nahi aayega. Right? So this way, if you allow them or help them to make their own decisions, now, here I suggest to the parents that because you know what is the scenario, you know what can go wrong. So, aag lagti hai, to fire brigade jaise khade raho. If it catches the fire, you control it. If not, well and good. Your child has taken good decisions. Right? So, if this way you handle your teenagers, they get what they want and they are comfortable.
And they know that whatever happens, the parents are there to support them. The parents are there for them. That confidence. Exactly.
I think the crucial point is the parent is ready with the fire brigade and not actually ensuring that there is no fire itself.
Another aspect of, you know, entering into adolescence and teens is the need for privacy, which actually is, for a parent, it becomes scary. Because then it is just shutting the doors to what is happening in your child's life. It is all kind of privacy. It as simple as locking the door every time and sitting inside, you know, having no connection with the outside world, with the family or with the guests come, etc., etc. To locking the phone, to having private conversations, to not sharing, you know, what's happening in their social life. So can you give us a perspective on what is the right way to handle this? You know, how should parents look at the need of privacy of a, you know, growing up child?
So I will say this need of privacy comes from two factors. One is the changes which they are going through, like the physical changes, the emotional changes. there's some kind of feelings which appear in their body or what they sense, which is not familiar, which is something new, which something which is not experienced earlier. Like I touch a girl and there is an electric current flows through my body, or other way you can say. And I don't know why this happens. Earlier it was not happening. Now suddenly it started happening. Right? So that experiencing the body itself and trying to understand what is changing in me, why this is happening, make them introvert a little bit. They spend time with themselves, trying to understand what is it, why it is happening. So may not be so much clear as a reasoning part, but trying to experience it again and again, or trying to rehearsing that in the mind again and again to make it familiar for themselves. And this is where they lose their focus in the study as well, because these are the experiences which are new and they keep on troubling. And because of that, the focus gets deviated. Focus get deviated doesn't mean that they are focusing on something else. They're basically, they are trying to understand themselves. So this is one aspect. The other aspect is intelligence is building. I start understanding something more. I know something. So you treat me as an adult. Don't interfere. Don't keep on telling me that what I should do, what I shouldn't do, and judging me. If we build that trust that, okay, whatever you feel, whatever you think, I am ready to listen to you. I am ready to give an opportunity to take your own decisions. Only thing is that you just consult with me. Before taking a decision, consult whatever you are looked for as options or whatever the decision is based on. And if I have something extra, I can give you that knowledge. You can use that knowledge for making decision. I'm not saying that you take decision based on my knowledge or my decision. I provide you the additional information which I get from my experiences, which you yet not are not having, right? So when you do that, there is a communication, there is a trust. And when this trust is good, then they don't need privacy. But if there is no trust, then they need that locking of the phone, locking of the door. You don't listen to my conversation, what I'm talking to my friends. Because when I talk to my friends, I use slangs. Right? Mm. So you need to accept that I use slangs because my peers use the same thing. So if you keep on judging and evaluating and correcting continuously, I don't like you to be in my life for that period. So I close the doors. And if I close the door and still you are not maintaining that respect of closed door, then I lock the door. But if you start respecting, if you knock, give him time and then enter, then the locking will not happen. If you don't even generally enter and ask questions, even the door closing will not happen. Right? So if we build that trust in communication and their whatever they are doing is right from their age's perspective, without passing your judgment from your generation's thinking and listening to what they think about you, then there is no need of this. Okay, so this is ideal scenario. It will never happen. But at least some access you will have when you keep this kind of communication with them.
Yes, I think we as a parent, all of us want to trust our child, and that's what we tell them as well. But
the doubts
inside us, sometimes we still feel uncomfortable, and that is our inner battle which we have to fight.
Doctor, you mentioned about the physicality of the individual changes as they enter into the teens. Now here's a listener question which is kind of related to this. I will just read that out, and can you help us with an answer for that? Should the parents initiate the discussion about puberty, or is it better for the professionals, probably school counselors or maybe outsiders, to do it?
Yeah, straight answer to this is yes, you can. If you can handle it neutrally, if you can react to them very neutrally when they ask questions, like you give information and they will suddenly ask something as a difficult question. So if you're confident that you can handle it neutrally, yes, initiate it. Because that's the best thing to do. The right age to initiate it is 11-12, where they are not yet into the adolescent thought process, but they understand the language completely. So there the innocence is there, and they listen to it very neutrally and take it as an information. So 10-11 is the right
11-12
is the 10, right 11, age. Okay. Beyond that, many times children will know many things. So when you start talking 13-14, if you start talking, they will say, I know. Because they have discussed it with their friends somewhere, school also, nowadays 6th standard, 7th standard, they teach them. So they will have the information. So that's if you have a ability to react neutrally. If not, better give it to the professionals.
Would you suggest any resources, any books which the parent can give to the child, any videos which
very
can
much
help
which I like the most is for children is menstrupedia.com Aditi Gupta. She has come up with two comic books. One is for girls and one is for boys. So Menstrupedia is for girls and Gulu is for boys.
Okay.
And for Marathi people, I will say Hello Sexuality by Prasanna Gadre, Dr. Prasanna Gadre, is a good book for parents.
Okay. Thank you so much for that.
Okay.
Because so many times we think that we are ready to have that conversation, but as you mentioned, as the questions keep on coming, which might come the same day or the following days and weeks, then it starts becoming more trickier to answer them.
Yeah.
Talking about and porn, like you said, nowadays children are exposed to such things very early on in life. So if you don't address the sexuality, puberty kind of discussions in by 10-12, that's what you mentioned right now, then the innocence is gone and they might already have been exposed to it from outside. So how does a parent equip the child to make the choice, you know, of accessing it or not?
Okay. I will not say restrict them accessing it. But when they get exposed to it, how they think about it, if you have nurtured the thought process right in the early age, exposure doesn't make any difference. Okay. Watching movies, watching TV, web series will not make you get spoiled or something, because web series, TV serials or movies will always have a good part and the bad part. Socially acceptable part and socially non-acceptable part is what we are saying actually when you say good and bad. Right? So if you are watching movies with them right from their childhood, including the cartoon movies and all, and if you're discussing about it, and the discussions are more on rational thoughts, then children's thought process has developed that way. And when they get exposed to this, they don't get carried away with that because they know how to and what to extract from that. And they will pick up that. Right? So this fear of getting spoiled when they get exposed to that will vanish if you have this kind of discussions right from the childhood continued with your children. So this we can very well build.
Fair enough. Right. Another question which I had in mind, or rather a curiosity, is you have mentioned that this decision of being a parenting coach has also come from the triggers that you have seen in your corporate life as a management leader. So can you give us, you know, some perspective about what behavioral observations did you do in the adults in your team that made you feel the need, or you know, to reflect and to go back to their childhood upbringing style?
Okay. So one thing which hit me is the understanding from my study that many adulthood behavioral difficulties are not their skills related problem, are not their inabilities, but the childhood fears at the subconscious level. My observations, which many corporate people will agree with me, that more and more adults we start seeing nowadays as they don't take initiative. Self-initiative is slowly going down, especially in India. I see this. I don't know in the other countries. The second thing which I see is that when you assign a work to individual employee, he does it fantastically. The individual working is excellent, but when they are into team, the teamwork gets really deteriorated. So in team, the blame game is very high. And the third thing which I saw is the upward communication. These are my prominent observations, I'll say. Upward communication is escalating the difficulties to higher ups right in the time, well in time. Right? So here, when I started experimenting with this or correcting these behaviors in the team, I realized this, that these are not the skill related problem, because I see that person is very capable. I give the feedback that you are very capable. You don't have to worry about it. You can take right decisions. You can do, you can take initiatives and do. But when I experimented with them, I saw a fear. I did a very simple experiment with a very difficult client we were dealing with in one of the project, and the project manager and me, we were having discussion. I was the head of the department at that time. So I dictated some points and I said that based on these points, you draft a letter and send it to him. We'll see what happens tomorrow. And then he drafted the letter and came to show it to me. So I said, I'm not going to look at it. You have drafted it, you can send it. You are capable of drafting a good letter. And what I observed is there were tremors in his hands. His fingers were shaking. So I said, what happened? So he said, no, can you please once look at it? And then I refused it because I didn't want to transfer the ownership to me. Because what happens is, as I read that letter, in his mind, I have seen this. So tomorrow something happens. Boss ko dikhaya tha. So that part I was eliminating. And there I saw the fear. So after my study of psychology, I understood this, why this happens. Is early childhood, less than 6 years, before 6 years, there are some traumatic emotional experiences which create a scar on your mind, and that lasts for a lifetime. Unless you actively try to come out of it, the other person cannot bring you out. You will also see many people, through my counseling now I see, there is an inherent or inner feel of being lonely. Right? So there are many friends around, there are many people around, but the person still feels lonely. Right? That loneliness is also impact of childhood experiences. And that you cannot remove. That loneliness becomes very difficult to be removed. Right? So these are the impacts. So when I saw this, I realized that I cannot correct the older generation or my team. I cannot do anything, not much. Then I had conversations with counselors, psychologists and all. There also I got the feedback on the same lines. Unless the adult wants to get out of this scenario on his own, the counselor also cannot help him. Right? That's the difficulty. Relatives cannot pick up a person, put it to the counselor and then say that, okay, correct him. Becomes very difficult unless that person is ready to come out.
I'm just curious to know what causes children or even adults not to take initiatives.
Okay, it's a good topic. You can attend my seminar once. But let me tell you that about four and a half years, these children are very good in their physical motor controls. So sensory motor development is well done up to four and a half. And now they want to work, use it, because it's developed. So I can use scissors, I can use knives, I can use hammers, I can use screwdrivers. Everything is very fantastic. And then the child want to do multiple things. Unfortunately, sometimes the scenario comes that he gets a scissors, pair of scissors, and mom's naya dress. And then he does a fantastic work, very nicely cut. And the child expects that I get a praise now, such a nice work I have done. And before he realizes something, what one bang, phad ke phatka milta hai, wo char phad ke dur ja ke padta hai. And then he don't know what happened. He only knows that I tried something and something big happened. And that becomes a subconscious memory.
Scar. That's a scar.
That's a scar. Yeah. I can give this very clear understanding to you, like what I'm saying. Especially if you're grown up in India. Suppose you're on the vehicle, you have everything with you, that you have a valid license, you have a right RC book, you know very clearly that nothing is wrong with you. you park, you stop your vehicle at the signal, you're before the white line, which is supposed to be a stopping line, you're there, and the police starts walking towards you. What happens inside you? Right? That is a childhood impact.
Oh my God. Right? And so many of us have gone through this, and this feels natural and normal.
So thank you so much for that.
Thank you. Yeah, I mean, I can't get over this. Thank you so much for giving this perspective, sharing this perspective, really.
For every parent, though they are concerned about, will my child do well in academics? Will he get admission in the good college? Will he have a good career? Will he accept failures? There are so many things which we are worried as a parent. But what we really, really want is to have a good relationship with our children throughout our lives, and to share the joys and ups and downs. And though today you have shared many tips on how to build that relationship, if you could just sum it up for us or share the top things which we as a parent should remember and of course practice so that make those changes happen, what would it be?
So let me tell you one magical thing. Just one thing you do and many things will get solved, right? So that is love your child. Okay. Now, when I am saying love your child, let me also explain you what is love your child means. So I want you to, and those who are listening also, to do an exercise with me. Mm-hmm. Identify one person in your life about whom you think that person loves you most. You experience love with that person. Right? Somebody who loves you is very clear for you. That's the topmost person in your list.
Most of the times it would be our moms.
Yes. So whoever it is. Identified. Now you answer why you feel so.
Because they express it in their actions, in their words.
What else? What is that uniqueness with them?
That they accept you the way you are. They love you for who you are.
They do correct you, but at the same time, they want you to be you.
Okay. So if I have to summarize what you said, is they understand you. Even if you go wrong, they listen to you. They try to understand you, what has happened, and they support you. They are with you. Even with your mistake, they don't turn themselves away from you. They stand with you. Right? So those are the people, those who accept you the way you are with your mistakes. They correct your mistake, but they don't leave you. They always make you feel that they are going to be with you, whatever mistakes you do, right? So those are the people whom you experience that they love you. So if I have to take two faces of this hand, if this side is acceptance, the other side experiences love. If you want your children to experience love,
accept them the way they are.
So please do love your children.
Yes.
Thank you for redefining this, because love is a lot of times misinterpreted as being, you know, providing what they want.
Yes. And if we look at the way our culture is, we don't have, I mean, we never, as growing up, no one kept on telling us in words that, hey, I love you. But nowadays we do that. But actually, it is the feeling which is more important of acceptance, which translates to love.
Yeah.
So thank you so much for that. And it was indeed...
It was a wonderful conversation, Dr. Dinesh. We had a lovely time, and I'm sure our listeners are going to love it and have a lot of takeaways from this. And we hope that they find it so useful that they join you in your seminars and your programs. The details about the show or of what Dr. Dinesh does, his sessions, will be in the show notes. So in case anyone wants, please do, connect.
Yes. I'm always available. Anybody wants to contact, come to me, please do come. I'm placed in Pune, available in Pune anytime.
Thank you so much. It was wonderful talking to you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
I'm just going to stop recording.
Before signing off, we have a small request. If you like what we do, Please subscribe to us on the app you're listening to, give us a 5-star rating, and drop us a review. Your small actions make a big difference to us. Please do share our podcast with your friends and family to help them raise happy and confident children. If you'd like to know more about Partners in Upbringing, do visit our website, partnersinupbringing.com. We also conduct parenting webinars with experts. So if you would like to organize one exclusively for your school or organization, do drop us a message on Facebook or Instagram at Partners in Upbringing, or you can email us on contact@partnersinupbringing.com. We would love to hear from you. If you have a feedback or a comment or a suggestion, or if you would like us to cover a particular topic on the podcast, please do write to us. Meet you again in the next episode of Partners in Upbringing with another topic and a new expert or an inspiring parent. Until then, goodbye, stay safe, and happy parenting. The content of this podcast is the copyright of the makers of this podcast, Partners in Upbringing. The information, opinions, and recommendations presented in this podcast are for general information only, and any reliance on the information provided in this podcast is done at your own risk. This podcast should not be considered as professional advice unless stated. Please refer to https://www.partnersinupbringing.com for further details.